Welcome to Better Bachelor. This is Joker with a face for radio and a voice for print. I have an article that was just published. It's by a lovely writer named... We can pull up her name here real quick. Where'd it go? Ashley Fetters, and she's a staff writer for The Atlantic. She breaks down a little bit of what I was talking about in my other video when I was talking about statistics about dating. And she says the dating market is getting worse. Interestingly, though, she doesn't agree with the assessment that women have all the choice and men are the falling into what used to be the 80-20 rule is now the 95-5 rule. She doesn't agree with that. So we're gonna read her writing here. And again, this is another web page that's really not good for layout, because I'm using it from an archive. So we'll try to do our best here. If it's kind of tiny and hard to see, we'll listen. It's a little bit of a longer read, but I think it's important because it kind of breaks down what we talk about a bit, and she tries to poke holes in it, but that doesn't really work. So let's get into it, and we'll have a fun read here. The dating market is getting worse. The old but newly popular notion that one's love life can be analyzed like an economy is flawed, and it's ruining romance. Ever since her last relationship ended this past August, Liz has been consciously trying not to treat dating as a numbers game. By the 30-year-old Alaskan's own admission, however, it hasn't been going great. Liz has been going on Tinder dates frequently, sometimes multiple times a week. One of her New Year's resolutions was to go on every date she was invited on. That is a mistake, just to begin with, because there are some pretty weird people out there. But Liz, who has to be identified only by her first name in order to avoid being pestered, can't escape a feeling of impersonal, business-like detachment from the whole pursuit. It's like, if this doesn't go well, there are 20 other guys who look like you in my inbox, and I'm sure they feel the same way, that there are 20 other girls who are willing to hang out or whatever, she said. People are seen as commodities as opposed to individuals. Yes, people are viewed as commodities, and oftentimes it's pretty easy because you are kind of shopping. All you're doing is getting a picture of somebody, and you read a little bit of their profile if they even put anything, and then you flick it off the screen and you either get a match or not. The thing is, though, that she feels like, well, there's 20 other guys I can look at in my inbox, and you must feel the same way. Except men don't have 20 other girls that are out there, unless she's hanging out with we used to say a 20%er, but now maybe it's a 5%er. But unless she's hanging out with somebody that's exceptionally popular, right? They continue, it's understandable that someone like Liz might internalize the idea that dating is a game of probabilities or ratios, or a marketplace in which single people have to keep shopping until they find the one. The idea that a dating pool can be analyzed as a marketplace or an economy is both recently popular and very old. For generations, people have been describing newly single people as back on the market and analyzing dating in terms of supply and demand. In 1960, the Motown act The Miracles recorded Shop Around, a jaunty ode to the idea of checking out and trying on a bunch of new partners before making a deal. The economist Gary Becker, who would later go on to win the Nobel Prize, began applying economic principles to marriage and divorce rates in the early 1970s. More recently, a plethora of market-minded dating books are coaching singles on how to seal a romantic deal, and dating apps, which have rapidly become the mode du jour for single people to meet each other, make fool around, and romance even more like shopping. Again, this is why I think a lot of dating is dead today. Just because when you lived in and I think they get into this in the story, but when you lived in a small town a long time ago, you maybe had a few classmates, someone that you might have graduated with around your age, and there weren't huge choices, and you found somebody that you felt was the best match out of that, and you made a go out of it. Then as cities became more popular, people moved to cities. Big cities, you have more choices. Smaller, not so much. But you still met people every day. You'd meet them around your workplace. It might be a secretary that worked there for a guy, or maybe you'd meet her at the coffee shop or the bookstore or the market or somewhere in a face-to-face interaction. Nowadays, about the only place you can really meet somebody on a face-to-face interaction is maybe if you go to the gym, maybe if you have a hobby or a group hobby, and maybe a coffee shop or something like that, and the workplace. But the workplace is out. That's just not a place that you can safely date anymore. But With the invention of an app, if you are in, say, we'll use someplace very heavily populated, if you're in Manhattan, New York, you can boil it down to just a couple of digits within an age range. So if you're 35, you could set it from 33 to 38, and you'll probably have thousands of matches. I mean, there's millions of people in New York, and you know, I think the entire size of New York is only from the tip of Manhattan up north past Harlem is probably, what, 4 or 5 miles? And I think it's only a mile and a half wide. So New York City itself is not a lot of real estate. So a mile, you can be hitting tens of thousands of people. It's just so easy to meet people now that, again, it's, I don't like the color of her nail polish. Psst. Unfortunately, the unfortunate coincidence is that the fine-tuned analysis of dating numbers game and the streamlined use of its trial and error process of shopping around have taken place as dating's definition has expanded from the search for a suitable marriage partner into something decidedly more ambiguous. Meanwhile, technologies have emerged that make the market more visible than ever to the average person, encouraging a ruthless mindset of assigning objective values to potential partners and to ourselves, with little regard for the way that that framework might be weaponized. The idea that a population of single people can be analyzed like a market might be useful to some extent to sociologists or economists, but the widespread adoption of it by single people themselves can result in a warped outlook on love. Again, you're trying to take the interesting, fun randomness of meeting somebody and having a good conversation or feeling some spark and boiling it down to paper. It's just not the same. It's one of the reasons why you can read, you know, they say a picture's worth 1,000 words. Well, when you look at a picture of somebody online, it's very easy to assign characteristics to them, even if it's not accurate. Moira Weigel, the author of Labor of Love, The Invention of Dating, argues that dating as we know it, single people going out together to restaurants, bars, movies, and other commercial or semi-commercial spaces, came about in the late 19th century. Almost everywhere for the most of human history, courtship was supervised, and it was taking place in non-commercial spaces, at homes, so on and so forth. She said in the interview, somewhere where other people are watching. What dating does is it takes the process out of the home, out of supervised and mostly non-commercial spaces, to movie theaters and dance halls. Modern dating, she noted, has always situated the process of finding love within the realm of commerce, making it possible for economic concepts to seep in. So, you know, that is true that if I were to ask a young lady out on a date, we might go out to dinner, we might go out to dancing, we might go out to the movies, but that's all in public spaces. And you'd behave, you'd find time to get to know each other, and you'd kind of learn about each other before you even had an opportunity to get much more serious or have some inappropriate fun. But now with the swipe culture, you can talk to them, you can have a conversation, you can get to know them without ever meeting them face to face. And then it's quite easy to make an arrangement to have one go over to the other's place and the rest of the fun ensues. That has definitely changed the dating world very significantly in just the last, 6 or 8 years. The application of the study and supply and demand concept, Weigel said, may have come into the picture in the late 19th century when American cities were exploding into population. This talks about the moving into cities and dating like I was talking about. In the modern era, it seems probable that the way people now shop online for goods in virtual marketplaces where they can easily filter out features they do and don't want has influenced the way people shop for partners, especially on dating apps, which often allow the same kind of filtering. The behavioral economics researcher and dating coach Logan Uri said in an interview that many single people she works with engage in what she calls relation shopping. That is a woman thing. Now, yes, guys will swipe through lots of gals as well, but men really don't have quite the same criteria as women do when it comes to dating. How do I know this? I've been in lots of relationships. I've met many of my friend and the relationships that they're in. I've met their wives. I've met their girlfriends, so on and so forth. Men are pretty happy if she's nice, if he finds her attractive, even if no one else does, if she makes him think provocative thoughts about her, then it's all good. If she has a decent job and you know, at least can take care of herself, usually that's fine. If she has some good hobbies and is nice to him and is supportive of him, that's kind of where we start. That's our baseline. There's no rule out there. And yes, some guys will say, I like petite women or I like shorter women or whatever. But usually there's not a laundry list of things. However, today, especially coming from the women's side, it seems that I don't want somebody that's under a certain height. I want someone that's athletic, must have a good job, must like this, must like my two kids because they're my world, right? It becomes a list of here's what I want from the women's side. And again, here's what I am from the men's side. We've talked, and why is it arranged like that? Because women seem to have all the choices because they seem to get so many more matches. It's the guy trying to sell himself to her. People, especially as they get older, really know their preferences, so they think they know what they want, Uri said, and retroactively added quotation marks around the words, know what they want. Those are things like, I want a redhead who's over 5'7", or I want a man who at least has a graduate degree. So they log into a digital marketplace and start narrowing down their options. They shop for a partner in the way that they would shop for a camera or Bluetooth headphones. But Uri went on, there's a fatal flaw in this logic. No one knows what they want so much as they believe they know what they want. Actual romantic chemistry is volatile and hard to predict. It can crackle between two people with nothing in common and fail to materialize in what looks like, on paper, a perfect match. Uri often finds herself coaching her clients to broaden their searches and detach themselves from their meticulously crafted checklists. We know this too. Why? Because there's very tall, successful, handsome, good-looking guys that are good partners and would make a great relationship. But many times, and the same can be said for women. They're successful, pretty, nice, so on and so forth, women, and their partners will step out on them, right, and go find someone new because all of their needs aren't being met. Now, is that boiled down to because they get bored, because they're no longer feeling the excitement and the tingles anymore? That's usually yes from the women's side. From the men's side, it's usually he's not getting enough fun at home and he's getting some attention from someone else he finds attractive and he wishes to enjoy that attention. The fact that human-to-human matches are less predictable than consumer-to-good matches is just one of the problems with a market metaphor. Another is that dating is not a one-time transaction. Let's say you're on the market for a vacuum cleaner, another endeavor in which you might invest considerable time learning about, weighing your options, and search for the best fit for your needs. You shop around a bit, then you choose one, buy it, and unless it breaks, that's your vacuum cleaner for the foreseeable future. You likely will not continue trying out new vacuums or acquire a second and third as your non-primary vacuums. In dating, especially in recent years, the point isn't always exclusivity, permanence, or even the sort of long-term relationship one might have with a vacuum. With the rise of hookup culture, the normalization of multiple partners, and open relationships, it's perfectly common for people to seek partnerships that won't necessarily preclude them from seeking other partnerships later on in addition. This makes supply and demand a bit harder to parse, given that marriage is more and more commonly understood to mean a relationship involving one-to-one exclusivity and permanence. The idea of marketplace and economy maps much more cleanly onto matrimony than dating. I think, and this is just my personal take on it, I think this started when guys are in their younger years, they tend to want to go out and have fun. And they don't think about settling down usually until a little bit later in life. As they would get into their 30s, they would think about families, they would think about having a home, they would think about having permanency, a wife that was a friend, a homemaker, a cook, would be a good mother to their children, and the guys would settle in as, I have a good job, and we have a family, and done. That's kind of gone out the window for a couple different reasons. Number one, the nanny state has stepped in, and of course, child support now takes care of a lot of the financial things that men brought to the relationship. So men aren't needed for that anymore. Number two, the being there and being a father and being there to raise the kids, well, they feel that that's not necessary anymore either. So he's removed for that. What else? Being a partner, being a strong figure. Well, don't need that because women are strong today. And again, I'm not necessarily saying that's a bad thing, but this is, you know, when women are strong, they don't need men, and men don't really want super strong women because it's too combative. So that part breaks apart. So what you end up having is the whole center or the nucleus of the family breaking apart. And that's changed the dynamics of dating. Now, when you look at it today, women, again, used to be relatively chaste and keep themselves from having many partners. And so they would wait until marriage. And a guy would step up to marriage because his bonus or his benefit for that marriage would be the easy and relatively often access to her and fooling around. Well, now that's gone. Guys can get that without having to dedicate their finances and dedicating a marriage and a home. And so women, unfortunately, and it's there's no other way to put it, women have become cheap. They've become easily accessible. And as such, they've really taken away what they would have as far as that value. You know, when something is rare and it's a rare commodity, the value of it is very high. That being said, if access to having a fooling around with women and having fun in the bedroom with a woman is very difficult, that is a high cost. And men would pay for that cost by marrying her and having a family and providing for her and putting a home. And she would pay back by being herself, giving him regular access to the bedroom, cooking, taking care of the family, like I said before. But now it's that cost is nothing. In many cases, it's actually free. So men do not have to come forward with anything to benefit her. He comes forward with nothing. And in many cases, unless, you know, if he's attractive or he makes a little bit of money or he's funny or whatever. So this casualness about it is really to a woman's detriment. It's not to her benefit. If anything, it were women to kind of bring their craziness and their wild actions in line and not put it out there quite as easily, their value would go up and they would find men would commit to them. And men that were a better guy or better suitor, so to speak, would come forward, and those are the ones she can choose. However, now as it is, you know, again, it's, well, if he's attractive, good enough for me. Well, now you've X'd out a lot of really good guys, and these small group of guys are having all this fun, and, well, they're not going to do anything because they're having all this fun for free. And the guys that have been knocked out of the market, yes, some of them are still very thirsty and will jump through hoops to try to make something happen. But the rest of them kind of say, well, you know what? Because of everything that you've done so far in your life and who you've been with and all the fun that you've had without me, and then you come around to me saying, well, now I want the home, and you've lost your value already at that point. It's not there anymore. When market logic is applied to the pursuit of a partner and fails, people can start to feel cheated. This can cause bitterness and disillusionment, or worse. They have a phrase here where they say the odds are good, but the goods are odd, Liz said, because in Alaska, on the whole, there are already more men than women, and on the apps, the disparity is even sharper. She estimates that she gets 10 times as many messages as the average man in her town. I would bet it'd be more than 100. It sort of skews the odds in my favor, but oh my gosh, I've also received a lot of abuse. Recently, Liz matched with a man on Tinder who invited her over to his house at 11 p.m. When she declined, she said he called her 83 times later that night between 1 a.m. and 5 a.m., and when she finally answered and asked him to stop, he called her the B word and said he was teaching her a lesson. It was scary, but Liz said she wasn't shocked, as she has had plenty of interactions with men who have been bubbling latent anger about the way things are going from them on the dating market. Despite having received 83 phone calls in 4 hours, Liz was sympathetic towards the man. At a certain point, she said, it becomes exhausting to cast your net over and over and receive so little. You know, there was a point in time I would read a paragraph like that and feel sorry for somebody that happened to them. However, anymore, so many people try to signal that they're, oh, feel sorry for me and this happened to me, that she says here when she declined, he called her 83 times that night between 1 a.m. and 5 a.m. And when she finally answered and asked him to stop. Okay. Number one, this is modern times. So if you're on Tinder, very, very rarely do you need to even give out your phone number if you just matched like it sounds like here, you text them. You don't give out your phone number. Number two, there's this cool little button on a phone called block. So if somebody bothers you, you can just go, block, and you never hear from them again. So why you'd have to feel like you have to answer it after 83 times to tell him to stop, I just have a hard time believing that. Maybe it really happened, but you see what happens. There's so many stories out there that are so exaggerated, it's really difficult to take anybody on their face value anymore. They continue on. The reaction to failure is also present in conversations about SMV, or the market value, a term popular on Reddit that is sometimes abbreviated as SMV, which usually involves complaints that women are objectively overvaluing themselves in the marketplace and belittling the men they should be trying to date. It's actually true, and I've done that other video on that and a couple of them. The logic is upsetting but clear. The shaky foundational idea of capitalism is that the market is unfailingly impartial and correct, and that its mechanisms of supply and demand and value exchange guarantee that everything is fair. It's a dangerous metaphor to apply to human relationships because introducing the idea that dating should be fair subsequently introduces the idea that there is someone who is responsible when it's unfair. When the market's logic breaks down, it must mean someone is overriding the laws. And in online spaces populated by men and women, by men, women have been charged with the bulk of these crimes. Here's why this complaint is happening. When you have, again, and they talk about this in a little bit, when you have an average guy trying to talk to an average girl and she acts like she's way too good for him, he's going to get frustrated. He's going to get upset. He knows he's a good guy. He knows he's a good person. Yes, he knows he's not great, but an average guy feels that he should be able to get an average girl. When these girls all chase after the same top, 10, 20, 30% of men, and other guys see this, it's very frustrating. Ultimately, though, everyone except for the very top gentlemen win. Why? Because the bottom 70% of guys or 60% of whatever, they all lose. They don't get to date. They don't get to find somebody that they are compatible with or that is equal on their level. They're just left out. So they lose. Now, the top, we'll say 80% of women, the top 20 or the bottom 20% of women, they may get a little bit of luck on the men's market, but I don't think either one may be happy there. The top 80% of women, however, have access to these top 20% of guys, and it's wonderful. They may casually date and it may fail, but if there's, three guys, A, B, and C, and this girl dates A, who's a really great guy, but it doesn't work out because he's flaky and doesn't want to settle down, or she doesn't, and then she goes out with B, and the same thing happens, and then she goes out with C, and the same thing happens, these three guys are happy. They've all had a little bit of fun. She's happy. She's all had a little bit of fun. Where it all falls apart, though, is when it's time to settle down or the market value drops. When that happens, these 80% of women that enjoy the top 20% of men, those top 20% of men continue on their actions, and eventually the women's value drops enough that now they have access to no one. Now, traditionally, they would go back to the bottom 80% of men and say, okay, we're ready for marriage, or we need somebody to be a stepfather to my kids, because they are my world, and I've chosen you, and you are suitable for what I want now. Well, that might have been okay, and yes, there are still some guys that are okay with that, but now guys are wising up, and they're saying, no, you didn't want me at your best. I don't want you at your worst, and that's what's happening now. The typical clean-cut, well-spoken, hard-working, respectful male who makes six figures should be a magnet for women, someone asserted recently on a thread posted on the tech-centric forum Hacker News. But instead, the poster claimed this hypothetical man is actually cursed because the Bay Area has one of the worst male-female ratios among the single. The responses are similarly disaffected and analytical. Some are arguing that the ratio doesn't matter because women only date tall men who are high earners, and they are much more selective than men. This can be verified on practically any dating app within a few hours of data, one commenter wrote. And if you watch the video that I just put up a little while ago, you'll see that 2 days ago or 3 days ago let me read the title of it here because I'm forgetting right now. It's let's look at dating app numbers. Economic metaphors provide the language for conversations on Reddit with titles like Thoughts on What Could Be Done to Regulate the Dating Market, and for a subreddit named Sarcastically, Where Are All the Good Men, with the stated purpose of exposing all the women who have unreasonable standards and offer little to no value themselves. On the really extreme end, some suggest that the government should assign girlfriends to any man who wants one, which is not all to say that all men are the only ones thinking this way. Where are the all the good men? If you've seen my videos of are showing dating profiles of women that have, you know, are 23 with, you know, six kids, and but she still wants a guy that's 6 foot tall and athletic and so on and so forth. That's where I find a lot of those. So you can, you know, you can make fun of it all you want, but it's pretty accurate. These women are low value, high standard. In the 54,000 member subreddit FDS, Female Dating Strategy, one of our favorites to go pick on, the first principle listed in the official ideology is being a high-value woman. The group's handbook is thousands of words long, but also emphasizes that as a woman, we have the responsibility to be ruthless in our evaluation of men. And they are. And men see this, and they say, it's just not worth it. The design and marketing of dating apps further encourage a cold, odd-based approach to love. While they have sure created at this point thousands, if not millions, of successful relationships, they have also aggravated for some men and some women, although they don't say that, their feeling that they are unjustly invisible to women. See, women, once they get to the mid-30s, start becoming invisible. Then they're just as aggravated as the guys. So you can see how they're pointing this as if it's the guy's fault, but in reality, it goes both ways. The 20-something women have all the choices. The 30, 40-something men have all the choices. Men outnumber women drastically on dating apps. This is a fact. In 2016, Literature Review also found that men are more active users of these apps, both in the amount of time they spend on them and the number of interactions they attempt. Their experience is not getting as many matches or messages, the numbers say, is real. I have a hard time thinking that men use these apps more. The only thing I can think of is they're maybe swiping more to try to cast the line, so to speak, and fish. But when they don't get any action, they go back to fishing. I have a feeling it's really the women that are searching through and looking through all the profiles and finding all the guys that messaged them and trying to pick which one's the best and then chatting with them to validate themselves and feel good about themselves. The data here supposedly shows otherwise, but I have a hard time believing that. But data sets made available by the apps can themselves be wielded in unsettling ways by people who believe the numbers are working against them. A since-deleted 2017 blog post on the dating app's Hinge official website explained an experiment conducted by a Hinge engineer, Aviv Goldgier. Using the Gini coefficient, a common measure of income equality with a country, and counting likes as income, they basically determined that men have zero income and women have all the income. I won't go through the whole study here. In a since-deleted 2009 official blog post on OkCupid's employee data analysis showed women rating men as worse-looking than medium 80% of the time and concluded, females of OkCupid, we site founders say to you, ouch, paradoxically, it seems women, not men, who have unrealistic standards for the opposite gender. This post more than a decade later is referenced in men's rights or men's interest subreddits as the infamous, and we all know it, 80-20 rule. And of course, I just did a video on that again 2 days ago. It proves it that it's true. But she calls it creepy. Creepy because what we as men are logical. And when something's not working for us, we just say, hey, why isn't this working? Let's break this down. What are the statistics? What are the odds? What is happening here? Maybe I can improve my odds, or maybe I can see the odds aren't worth it. Because we do this, though, we're creepy. They continue on, even without these creepy blog posts, dating apps can amplify a feeling of frustration with dating by making it seem as if it should be much easier. The Stanford economist Alvin Roth has argued that Tinder is, like the New York Stock Exchange, a thick market where lots of people are trying to complete transactions, and that the main problem with dating apps is simply congestion. To him, the idea of dating market is not new at all. Have you ever read any of the novels by Jane Austen, he asked. Dances were the internet of the day. You went and showed yourself off. The problem is, though, again, is that if there's 10 women standing there and 1,000 guys are all standing there and all 1,000 men want to date the 10 women, The women have the choices. Now imagine that there are 100 women and 100 men, and all the 100 women line up to try to talk to 20 men. The other 80 men are standing there saying, "What? What's wrong with me? I got nothing over here." And so they move along. And now the 20% of men, they get to say, "Hey, look at all the choices for me." So the 20% of men win. A lot of the women win because those 20 men will dance with 100 women, right? And the other 80% of men lose. And that's why men are frustrated about this. Daters have, or appear to have, a lot more choices on a dating app in 2020 than they would have at a provincial dance party in rural England in the 1790s, which is good until it's bad. The human brain is not equipped to process and respond individually to thousands of profiles, but it takes only a few hours on a dating app to develop a mental heuristic for sorting people into broad categories. In this way, people can easily become seen as commodities with interchangeable products available for acquisition or trade. What the internet apps do is they enable you to see, for the first time ever in history, the market of possible partners. Or it makes a dater think they can see the market when really all they can see is what an algorithm shows them. The idea of dating market is appealing because it's a market that's something a person can understand and try to manipulate, but fiddling with the inputs by sending more messages, going on more dates, toggling and retoggling search parameters, or even moving to a city with a better ratio isn't necessarily going to help anybody succeed on that market in a way that's meaningful to them. Last year, researchers at Ohio State University examined the link between loneliness and compulsive use of dating apps, interviewing college students who spent above average time swiping, and found a terrible feedback loop. The lonelier you are, the more doggedly you will seek out a partner, and the more negative outcomes you're likely to be faced with, and the more alienated from other people you will feel. This happens to men and women in the same way. And this is one of the other things where I've said, get off these apps, get off social media, get off things where when you're not in a good place and you look at all these other people that seemingly are in good places, it will bum you out. Or if you really want to meet somebody and you feel lonely and you try to meet these people and you don't get that match, it will bum you out. However, if it's something you're just doing as a goof or a lark and maybe you get a match, maybe you don't, then you got a reason. And again, I say, you know, social media can be a problem, but if you're in a good headspace, then it's fine. It's just when you're not in a good headspace where social media can really mess you up a little bit. There may always have been a dating market, but today people's belief that they can see it and describe it and control it in their place is much stronger. And the way we speak becomes the way we think, as well as a glaze to disguise the way we feel. Someone who refers to looking for a partner as a numbers game will sound coolly aware and pragmatic and guide themselves to a more odds-based approach to dating. But they may also suppress any honest expressions of the unbearably human loneliness or desire that makes them keep doing the math. She's got a lot of studies in here, and I'll link the story down below. I find it's an interesting article, and it was a really good read, even though she, again, takes the angle at it that it's, for some reason, the guys are kind of being weird and strange because they're trying to break down the market and try to understand what's going on. We know this as hypergamy. We know how this works now. We understand the data from it. And as I've shown in my other videos, it can be broken down and seen. So there's really not any surprises here, but I find it very interesting that it's really affecting everyone by this having so many choices. Again, is if you were to walk up to a buffet and your favorite food is pizza and you'd really like to have pizza all the time and then you'd like to have some cheesecake for dessert. Well, when you walk up to a buffet, it gives you the ability to say, "Oh, they have pizza. I'll take just a little bit of pizza because I like pizza, but I want to try all these other foods. I want to try all these other flavors. I want to try all these other things." That's not necessarily a bad thing. But at the end of the day, think about it. By the time you've eaten absolutely everything that's there on the plate, and you then become very picky, or there's so many choices you can become picky. And that's the dating market today. You might meet somebody that's absolutely wonderful for you. And whether you're a girl or guy, doesn't matter. You might meet somebody that's perfect for you. But once you select that person, that's it. That's your choice. But there's a buffet out there just waiting for you. And that's the problem a lot with dating today both from the very popular guys and from a large majority of the women, is they keep going back to the buffet to try different flavors and try more. And he's different, and he's different. Ah, that didn't work out, but I've got this choice over here, and so on and so forth. And there's a very much a fatigue to it. And at the end of this, you have you know, loved a dozen people, you've bedded 100 or whatever, and your receptors and the way that you can be happy with somebody and the way you can enjoy a relationship, the way you fall in love and the way you feel close to people is burnt out. And that's why, again, that transactional knowing all these assortment and choices are out there in the market. That's why a lot of people, by the time that they're in their early 30s, and when I say people, I'm mostly talking about women, because the guys, they don't want to settle down and it's not an emotional thing for them. They're having a good time. And the guys that do want to be emotional and have a loving, tender partner, they're going to get run over in today's market. So it's mostly the women, and they go out and they go through this buffet of dating, and they see what's everything's on the market, and they gorge themselves on this. And at the end of it, there's nothing left. There's nothing that looks interesting. There's nothing good enough. What's exciting enough that I'm stuffed as it is, but is there anything delicious enough left for me on this table that I want to go for? And in the end, it's kind of like, no, I think I'm good, but I'm lonely and I don't want to be alone. And I do want to have a family. And I'm 35 and it's getting tougher for me to get dates. And that's where we are, is that now we've got a growing group of women that are they still have that buffet mentality, but the buffet is empty. There's not nearly as many choices for them. There's some cold lasagna over here, and maybe three old chicken wings and some wilted salad. And when they had all the choices, they couldn't make up their mind. But now they're down to these three choices and they're not happy with it. So instead they say, it's not good enough. I don't want any of that. But then they complain because the men are still enjoying the buffet over at the young table, and the young women are over at that table enjoying the buffet. And now the 30 and the 40 somethings not so happy. Again, not fair. But as the guy's resources grow and as he has more things that he can bring to the table, he, at 40 or so years old, he sits down and puts out his beautiful buffet, and people will come to him to make a selection. It all changes. And the currency for men is hard currency and power. The currency for women is youth. Men, when they're young, don't have the money and the power. They get that as they get older. Women, when they're younger, they have the youth. So as women lose their currency over time, men gain currency. And somewhere in the middle, there used to be an X where they both crossed and they'd have an agreement of this works for both of us. But now, it's not happening anymore. Now it's not happening anymore. And that's why the dating world is just crumbling and falling apart. Guys, if you'd like to support my work, links are below. Thank you for all of those of you that have. I really appreciate it. And of course, like, comment, and share, and hit that notification and subscribe button down below. That's one of the best ways that you can support me. I'd really appreciate that. Go check out a couple of my older videos as well. I put so many out there that if you haven't seen them, none of them are really time-based, so you can go and see them at any point in time. So if I'm putting more videos out than you can keep up with, because I'm a maniac with insomnia, go back and check any of them at any point in time. They're all good. Guys, I'll leave it there. This is Benner Bachelor. I'm Joker. And remember, sometimes it's just easiest to walk away from the entire dating mess.